Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, it is Friday. Bill Writer with you. It has been a week, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We are, as we always are, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. We got a lot of stuff to get to at the open. You just heard it. My voice, you know, spliced several times. So I'll admit when I'm wrong. That apparently is going to happen every Friday as the WandaVision reviews just continue to pour in like some kind of rainbow of beauty celebrating the show I clearly wasn't smart enough to grasp early on. All right, so I'll... That crow I get to eat, I guess, will just be a dish served again and again and again. That's fine. I will own it. But I'm also right on stuff a lot of the time. Sometimes it takes a minute for that to occur. With Urban Meyer, it didn't. I didn't even need Urban to coach a game in the NFL for the whole "don't think it's gonna work" take to pay off. Paygene. Pete Prisco. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number here on the program. Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. We will talk about Urban's latest arrogant, boneheaded, tone-deaf, living-in-a-bubble, non-reality decision that can operate with some effectiveness when you are a dictator, when you run some sort of ridiculous ability to corner the market on talent. That's college football, folks. Ain't going to work in the NFL. 1 hour from now, we will, I think, live on the air. We have talked this week about a little bit about my vote for the NBA All-Star game. It's not a huge vote. There's a bunch of media members, and we media members make up 25% of the pool. But I think it is important when entrusted with those things to do it right and to take it seriously. It is an honor and responsibility, and to whatever fractional extent that responsibility and honor for me has an impact, we have navigated that together as a show, you, me, the guys, Tom DiBenedetto, Andrew Bogish, and we'll finalize that vote at the end of the hour. Tennis might be having a moment. I'm a tennis guy. There's some evidence to suggest it. I don't buy it. We may dive into that. We'll get into Carson Wentz. In a moment, I want to start with Tom Brady, but some breaking news out of the Texans, which really are, now just let this sink in for a second, okay? Really are competing, and it's going to take some effort. I don't know if they have what it takes. I don't know if they've got the commitment to this goal. And even if they do, there's a long ways to go. But the Houston Texans are aggressively making a case that they are the most dysfunctional organization in the National Football League. You can certainly point me to the Washington football team, and I understand that, but I think you saw not just a turnaround of effort and borderline football excellence on the field this year in Ron Rivera's arrival, but a cultural turnaround. Those things, the cultural turnarounds, are harder to get your arms around when they go better in a short term in one season. But certainly the Washington football team may have elevated itself out of that mire, out of that muck, out of that lowly position. You could point to the Jets. You could point to the Jets. But I think that we're going to see. You know, they're at the beginning of a process that may reflect, I think could reflect what we've seen from the Rivera-led Washington football team. I like Robert Saleh. I think there's a real chance that's going to be a better cultural reality. We'll see how the football plays out. few years ago when I was doing this show before Gruden got, I don't have it in front of me, I think it's $2 billion to coach for like, you know, 50 years, you could have made a case for the Raiders, 100 million, 10 years. I don't think that's the right answer anymore. It might be the Texans. And today, in fact, just I think 3 or 4 minutes before this program, Writer Than You, thank you for listening, I'm Bill Ryder. That program began, this program began, the news came down that J.J. Watt has been released by the Texans. Now, there's a few things here. One, we knew that J.J. Watt almost certainly wasn't going to play in Houston next season, but there was a fairly aggressive cottage industry of pundits and fan blogs, and I would imagine GMs, who were playing fantasy GM meets real GM in the real world in the notion of where he would fit. Man, J.J. Watt with the Patriots would be interesting. Man, J.J. Watt with the Bills would be interesting. Man, J.J. Watt with the Niners or the Seahawks or insert literally any football team that might have a need. And my point is this. There was certainly a market for J.J. Watt. The need to release him was not overwhelming. The need to move on from him might have been. And I want to give Tommy, the executive producer of the show, producer_Tom, credit for this image because he's the one that first said to me one of the lines you're going to hear here. You turn to the Godfather for insight in life, and you're turning to a well of wisdom from which you can drink for a long time. I've never traveled to a country where you could go to the top of a mountain and find a wise man and ask him questions about the meaning of the world. I know a guy that did, and I'm sure that was a very cool experience. But I think you just pop in the Godfather 1 or 2, and it's kind of the same difference, and you can order pizza, you know, at the same time. You don't have to leave the zip code, let alone the country. The Godfather is very wise. And so I picture Jack Easterby calling in, I guess it would be Deshaun Watson's agent, maybe, right? And just, today I settled all family business. So don't tell me Deshaun wants a trade, because I find it very disrespectful, and it makes me very, very angry. And then that agent is sure not to get in the front seat of the Uber that takes him to the airport. I mean, you got presidents stepping down. You got people moving on. And it's hard to see Nick Caserio as anything other than a puppet. And I should be careful. Of all people, I should be careful not to disparage an ambitious, a potentially talented, the key word being potentially, not talented. The focus on potentially talented being on potentially. The potentially talented Nick Caserio or anyone because of where they come from. We don't get to choose our opportunities. And I can tell you from personal experience, we don't get to choose our mentors. And more to the point, we don't get to choose who our mentors become. I was thinking about this as I've talked this week about Terrez Paylor and just how much he meant to me as he passed away this week. And I've just been thinking about and trying to do a better job of texting the people that I care about, right? And texting the people that greatly impacted my career and my ability to support the family the way that I do. And really just to talk to you into this microphone because I love doing this part of my job. And there are two people that, you know, if I had to make an honest list, there are two people that are on the sort of, you know, I think it's 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 people that to whom I owe a lot. You know, I am aware of the obligations that I have and the luck that I have been given, even though I've worked really hard. By the way, breaking news, thousands of people work really hard, right? Luck is a big part of it. And two of the people on that list of 10 or 11, I did not send a thank you note to. And one of them has become, for me, we all have disagreements, you know, in the time since I first met this person today, not only someone I don't speak to, but someone I'm horribly disappointed with. And I was talking to a friend of mine about whether I should send a note of gratitude in this moment of this sort of trying to embrace gratitude to this person. And my friend said to me, you know, the person that he was is not the person that he is. And you don't owe the person that he is a thank you. You owe the person that he was, that person's gone. And it got me thinking about the fact you can't choose always who gives you an opportunity. So I don't want to be mad at Nick Caserio for coming from the Patriots. I don't want to judge Nick Caserio, the GM in Houston, for having an association with Jack Easterby. I don't want to presume that Caserio is going to fail because every single, almost literally, and you could say literally, depending on how you want to judge the tenure in Atlanta for that gentleman and some other people, every single Bill Belichick personnel and head coach candidate in the NFL on any kind of long-term scale has been a failure. You can make the argument. Now, people would push back. People would say, Bill O'Brien, that's not fair, which is ironic given the Texans, and some other examples. But it's not like the Patriots and what they accomplished and the brain trust and the idea of football Mensa, you know, some football Mensa chapter in Foxborough has lived larger or truer or looks legitimate in the wake of that Bucs Super Bowl. I say all that to say this. Casario sure feels like a puppet to me. Yeah, I'm not going to disparage people, but I guess I'm going to tell you that's the direction I feel like it's trending. And Jack Easterby has taken care of all family business. Now, is he Michael Corleone? I don't know. I mean, I'm a big fan of alternate universes. I certainly think it's possible in some alternate universes that Fredo took over and things did not end well. For you Justified fans, you know at the end of the last couple seasons, there's a minor character out of Detroit who takes over the family business. Minor character, Tom. Don't worry. Not a spoiler, but yes, you should cover your ears. And that doesn't go well. You don't want Fredo running the family business. We're going to see. The J.J. Watt news isn't stunning in the sense that he's not there, but to me, it reflects something that Deshaun Watson said. People tell you who they are. Listen, that's Bill Parcells. And people tell you what's going on when they're angry. Listen, Deshaun Watson said, at the end of the season, we need people who care more about the right things the right way and not their personal power. That is a summation accurately of what he said. And maybe Jack Easterby is Michael Corleone. Because I tell you what, everyone underestimated Michael Corleone. His rivals, his Capitanos, his family, his brother, Kate, his wife. And in the end, most of those people got, and a few of them were like, damn, I'm glad I didn't go to the other side. Let's rule America together. I don't think that Jack Easterby. We're going to find out. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. I wanted to start with this, with Tom Brady, but it's nice when we're coming on the show, and a little insight into my process or my world. Got a cup of coffee, right? Listen to some music today. Randomly, it was Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven, but listen to that song for the last week and a half, basically on repeat. Talking to Tom about the show, we would come up with a plan, we talk through it, right? We feel good, like, okay, we're going to, Brady broke the NFL. Walk down the hallway, nod to a guy through my mask, he nods to me too. Pretty sure we spoke to each other, but can't understand each other. It's America, 2021. It's cool. I'm thrilled and blessed and happy to be here. And then the news breaks as we're coming on and we adjust. But I do want to say this before the show takes on the sort of pull and gravitational pull that it does when you're doing a two-hour show. Tom Brady has broken the NFL in the exact same way that LeBron James broke the NBA when he went to Miami and did his big three thing. Tom Brady's ability to demonstrate clearly that his ability, his power in choosing a team, his divorce isn't the story from the Patriots. It's the remarriage. It's, wow, Tom was the prize, not the problem. Tom was the better half, not the other half, of that relationship in New England that defined a sport. And it is easy when you are Tom Brady, or you are LeBron James, or you are the equivalent in these other sports that we talk about on a regular basis. You could maybe point to Nick Saban in a little bit different way as a coach. It is easy to look at these figures and to assume the lessons that apply to them apply to you. Because here's the thing, they don't. The Big Three era, the redefinition of the NBA, worked because LeBron James was part of it. The end, full stop, and period. Period. I mean, the only real force that has really been thrown up in LeBron James's way has been a Golden State Warriors team that grew its team naturally. They went the exact opposite direction. So Russell Wilson, I get you're amazing. Maybe forcing, you're not really forcing your way out, I don't think. But maybe all the drama and the awkwardness and, you know, the Ciara GQ, I think it's GQ interview, and 30 questions about why we love each other, wink, wink. This is me branding myself as someone who should be listened to. You're a lot less smooth than Aaron Rodgers, and I like you for it. It's interesting. You're the only Super Bowl champion, future Hall of Famer, married to an incredibly attractive, famous woman who can text out a chain back in the day, I guess tweet out a chain, you know, a photo of a big gold chain in your pajamas, and I find you cuddly and likable and awkward. I mean, what is going on? Oh, look at that guy. He means well. But your ability to choose your team may not have the same outcome because, breaking news, Russ, you're not Tom Brady. Aaron Rodgers' clear decision when his own legacy, his own path forward, his own very bright star was dimmed by Tom Brady face-to-face. Again, just a little math lesson for you. In the history of their careers, Aaron Rodgers has won a single Super Bowl coming out of the NFC, and so has Tom Brady. And Tom Brady's played in the NFC for all of 1 year. And Aaron Rodgers started to plant those seeds. I don't know what my future's going to hold. I don't know what it's going to hold. I understand you want to throw your weight around. May not work, A-Rob, the way you think it will because you're not Tom Brady. I'm not mad at Deshaun Watson. One of the few times I'm okay. I'm kind of down. I understand what he's doing. Because if you see Michael Corleone taking care of family business and making a bold move to take out the heads of the other five families, you might get down with that if you sort of see that that's going the right place. But if you think it's Fredo, right? If it's Fredo, and I can't make an assessment of Jack Easterby and Nick Caserio the way Deshaun Watson can, right? Probably going to defer to that guy. That's a pretty impressive guy. If that's what he thinks he sees, right or wrong, it's time to get out. And I get it. Tom made a great point. I mean, think about knowing you're going to be compared for the rest of your career to Tom Brady, not because you're in the same class, but because no matter how great your career, you may not even be in the same class if you don't win two or three or four. I could do an hour of radio, and I think it would be fairly entertaining, outside of the fact I'm the one doing it. No, I think it could be fairly entertaining, just all the careers that have been diminished by Brady. And if you're Deshaun Watson, Mahomes already has a head start on this. Not that Mahomes came out smelling like roses, but you don't in a GOAT prize fight. You're going to get bloodied. You're probably going to fail. But Mahomes at least knows that he can get to part of the mountain. I don't know if he can get to the top. I understand what Deshaun Watson's doing. Just be careful because you're not Tom Brady. It's easy to think if you're Russell Wilson, you want control of the offense. If you're Aaron Rodgers and you want control, I think, of everything. Or you're Deshaun Watson, I think understandably in this case, you just want the hell out of the Texans. You want Fredo to be, you know, doing whatever he's doing, you know, on his own. Fredo can stay in Vegas. Get me anywhere. Does the family have an operation in Kansas City? The River Market? I'm in. Sounds great. I'll do it. I'll work on it. Let's go. Tom Brady has broken the National Football League. And this need for power, this belief that if you can flex your muscle, and Russell Wilson has a lot of muscle, the guy's won a Super Bowl, and he's not 52 years old, is going to be infectious. It's going to spread. It's going to change the National Football League. It's going to shift the dynamic of power. And like in the NBA, I don't know it's going to be successful the way that people think, because all of these guys, all of them have one thing in common, along with every other player that's ever played the position, but one. And that thing is this. They aren't Tom Brady. You don't have to like it. I don't like it. You can find him likable because he was super drunk, I do, and unlikable for all the other stuff. You can be jealous of his accomplishments. You can be Andrew Bogish and scarred by the fact that your organization, and even with two Super Bowls against that team, you still have nightmares about the guy. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He's the greatest of all time. And that, I think, is the big Aaron judgment that some of these folks are making. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. We'll take some phone calls if you want to. Maybe turn to this tennis topic. There's a narrative being pushed that tennis is having a moment. And just my continuous, maybe we'll get some imaging for it. You know, Bill Ryder apologizes for being dumb about WandaVision. All of that coming up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Ryder Than You podcast.
855-212-4CBS is the phone number. We're going to get to Andrew Bogish in a minute, and I hope he wasn't listening. Because, like, every time I praise Brady, he gets this incredibly pained look on his face. There's, like, look, I haven't known Andrew long. I've respected him for a long time. I haven't known him long, about the 5 or 6 months we've been doing the show together. And we actually haven't been able to hang out in person. But I've become, over the course of my own life, fairly astute at reading pain on people's faces, in part because I think I create it. And I've only seen that level of pain on Andrew's face twice. When I gleefully tell the audience I have a surprise for him, and when I praise Tom Brady. So I'm hoping he missed the opening segment, because that's all there is. Like, it's just Tom Brady praise all the time, and I hate it too. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Tom DiBenedetto, Tom, where did you – it's interesting. Like, you and I hit this story in different ways, this tennis thing, because I play tennis, because it's the only sport that I play relatively well. And because as a fairly out of shape looking middle-aged dude who really enjoys, and this is going to be a straight character flaw. If I'm going to offend the group I'm about to offend, I apologize. But I love just kicking the ass of in-shape alpha rich guys in Southern California in tennis. Like, I get so much pleasure at showing up and watching the guy, like, roll his eyes and be like, oh, my God. Sometimes I even hit really badly in the warm-ups on purpose just because I enjoy it. So that's my tennis. That's my tennis thing.
I can definitely see why that's enjoyable.
It's real fun. I mean, look, I'm not a fat man, but I'm not an in-shape man. And there have been times that I've had like friends tell me, like, oh, you're playing, you know, Steve, who's Mr. He's all ripped, and he's like, you know, if you got a little chunk on you, he's gonna like bring it up and like be kind of, and I'll wear the tightest shirt I can find. Like, I will wear a shirt that makes me look like Eastbound Down. I mean, I'm just, you know, that's so in that weird little tennis world that I operate in, I've heard a lot lately that people, that the sport is just booming in terms of participation. There's not a lot to do, right? It is one of the few social enterprises. My kids play a lot, so there's a tennis pro we see a lot who gives lessons. I just found out yesterday she used to give lessons to Tom Brady, weirdly. I need to get those stories. Apparently he's a really nice guy. And I guess it's booming. And you said that you've heard that maybe there's a bigger picture than my community.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're the only one. I mean, it's safe. I mean, it's one of the very few group activities right now that you can do, that you can actually like go out to. There has to be multiple courts to get a group out there, but you can play. You can even play doubles pretty much safely right now. So I think that's helping.
Yeah.
And I think people are realizing that you don't need me to tell you, it's an incredibly fun sport, and it's constant action. It's great exercise. But I will say that I think the idea of a comeback on television, a comeback of interest in people watching the majors and actually watching tennis, is a completely divorced subject from participation.
I agree. And there's a narrative being pushed, and I've seen it from Dan Wolkin, I think, a little bit, who I respect enormously. And I met Dan when he was elsewhere, not at USA. I think he's still at USA Today. Excellent, excellent national writer. But Dan's, I don't know if it's contention, but I think a point that he's raised, and I think it's an interesting one, is this a renaissance for tennis? Can this be a breakthrough moment where we are captive audiences? I think we are desperate for things to consume, and there's the opportunity to have an influx of talent. And a part of me wants to say yes, because I didn't mock people who were soccer fans, right? I was like, I understand your love for the game, and my brother, for years, like, you got to get into it. And my answer was, dude, I don't have time. Like, I do sports for a living. I love it, but I'm trying to consume all these other sports, right, to keep up with it. And it was in the pandemic last year, and I had been watching some soccer because I, frankly, like the city of Barcelona, not really the soccer team, was sort of where that began, where I became obsessed with it because it was the only thing on. And I could see where that could happen. I'll make the point, Tom, that you made to me earlier today. I'm just not sure I can get into this idea that soccer is having a renaissance and it's about to have a breakthrough moment, because tennis just had the literal equivalent of LeBron James, Michael Jordan, and whoever that person is going to be in 10 or 15 years at the exact same time competing with each other, while people like Kareem and Steph and Magic and Bird were also playing and could barely win anything. If that was the last 15, 20 years, wasn't enough to make this a breakthrough sport or whatever, to get on the level of golf, it ain't going to happen. They didn't have their Tiger. They had three of them. Andy Roddick, who I really like and I've talked about and is an interesting guy, only won one major. And I have asked people, now that I've become able to connect with some experts across a variety of sports, like, honestly, like, how many should Andy have won? Like, is one, was it just kind of a one-off? And they said, no, like, he's not, you know, he probably in a normal era would have won three or four or five. And you go back and you look at the losses to Federer, and my point is this, like, that's one of, we talk a lot about how Brady destroys careers and how, which is true, and LeBron destroys careers and Jordan destroyed careers, like legacies that don't exist, that just don't exist. I think the golden era of tennis destroyed American tennis, because Andy Roddick is the brightest tennis light that this country has seen in a long time. No one's come up to replace him. Had Roddick won four or five or six, it's probably a different story. Djokovic and really Federer and Nadal to a certain extent, they impacted not Andy's career, that's true, but they impacted American tennis as a result, I think, for a really long time.
And
so that's, you know.
And yeah, it's almost it's almost cliche at this point to say that there needs to be a male American star to draw an audience, but the reality is it's cliche because it's time tested at this point, and you just nailed it. We just had a golden age of tennis that a lot of Americans didn't watch. I'll just say this, and I think it applies to soccer too, but it's more so for tennis. The advent of HD TV and a much more crisp viewing experience, plus the replay system in tennis, I think has upped the entertainment value of watching tennis on TV big time in the last decade. So maybe if more people can find their way to watching tennis on TV, they will enjoy it more than they ever have. You can see it all so much better, and the replay system it's the best replay system in sports.
I'll just say this, I thought about this a lot, because I love tennis, but I stopped playing it after high school until 5 years ago. And over that interim, I didn't watch a lot of tennis. When I met Andy, I had to go Google how many he'd won. I think it's one, but I was far from a tennis expert. And the reason I watch it is because I play it. And the reason that I watch baseball is because I played it. And look, I didn't play high school football, but I played a lot of football, right? I understand, it doesn't matter the casual nature with which you've played a sport. If you have that connection, you understand it in a more intimate way. I never played hockey. I tried for 4 weeks in Naperville, Illinois, when I lived there, and I turned out I couldn't skate. I played roller hockey. And I'm like, okay, I'm done with hockey, right? And so I think that's the other problem is that to build, and golf is a sport that I think was ripe for Tiger because a lot of people play golf. I mean, not all the time, right? Not well, but there were people that had played. I was talking to Therese's dad yesterday, and he's like, you know, he was telling a story about Therese, and he's like, you know, when I was golfing, I go, I didn't know you played golf. I'll come out to Detroit and we'll golf sometime. He's like, oh, I didn't say I play golf. I said I've been golfing. I said, yeah, we're on the same page. But it struck me, right, just a little familiarity. You don't have to be good at something to understand it. And a lot of folks have never picked up a tennis racket.
Totally. And one of golf's advantages that tennis also shares is it's one of the few spectator big-time professional sports that you can then go out on your own and kind of emulate as an adult, go try to play golf, you know, watch the round on Saturday and then go out on Sunday morning and be inspired. And tennis is actually one of the few you can do that too. I mean, you can go play Sunday league basketball and whatever, but that's nowhere near the same kind of thing.
Right.
And you know, football, you don't have, as an adult, you don't have any connection really to football anymore.
It's a great example. I played hoops all the time until really 3 or 4 years ago, and I just kept hurting my ankle. I mean, a big part of the reason I play tennis is I need an outlet to be competitive and to try to somewhat not look like Fletch Lives meets Jabba the Hutt. So it's true. But hoops is a great example. I used to have this board op that I used to work with at AM570. It was a very in shape, ripped dude who, named Kevin, who, and this will shock you, Andrew Bogish, I used to talk a lot of smack on the air. I used to be a less charitable person than yourself, Andrew and Tom would say braggadocio. And I was like, I will crush you in hoops. And this guy was 10, 15 years younger than me. And you guys have met me. I look, what is the opposite of athletic? Like me? Have I told this story? I have the anniversary on my calendar. I used to send out an anniversary, but I think he really didn't appreciate it.
We
talked for a year and a half about playing hoops one-on-one. And all the hosts there made fun of me and my bosses, and they sent out a film crew, and we went and we played, and I beat the guy 11-0. And then Dom Martin, my boss, who's 6'4", I was out of shape. I was really tired. I was you're going to play me, my man? I beat him too. I love the competitive nature of that stuff. And part of the reason I love hoops, I'm not good at it, but I'm not bad at it. Just messing around the playground, talking smack with your buddies, right? It creates a connection. WandaVision's amazing. I'm just gonna leave it there. I haven't even seen the latest episode. I've just seen all the whatever, bogus. You can't even smirk because you haven't seen the other. You gotta go back in time before you watch WandaVision.
So I'll watch it again after we've caught up on all of the movies, but I'm going to finish it now. I'm 3 episodes in. I finally saw one in color, so I got that going for me now.
Well, you haven't even gotten to the good stuff yet.
No, I guess not.
It's coming. It's 100% coming. Should we do a basketball challenge? You and me?
Can I understand the good stuff, though?
No.
No? Oh, so, great.
But it's kind of, it'd be kind of like if a wormhole opened up above you. I don't. You probably wouldn't understand the science of what's going on, but you'd be like, that is a marvel. I don't really understand it, but that is a marvel that I'm looking at. See what I did there? A marvel? You see what I, a little, just a little marvel?
Buy!
Yeah, no, I saw that. I'll buy it.
All right. You didn't. You're just like, I will wait this out. God, when is it time for my update?
He's almost done.
What is he talking about? All right. I'm going to try.
Is he off all of next week?
All kinds of new. Oh, my cell! No, it's a buy. It's a buy. Damn it.
Buy.
All right. So, do you want a positive transition to the update, or do you want a negative? What, Tom, you decide. What are you looking for? What do we want here?
Oh, good vibes only today.
Good vibes. Okay. So anyway, yeah, we're gonna get into we're gonna do this NBA ballot, and we're gonna vote. I'm gonna vote. We'll do it together live. The NBA All Stars, because I have a vote. But first, the person who is the All Star of CBS Sports Radio on every ballot, Andrew Bogish.
Truth.
Let's begin with your breaking news in the NFL, guys. J.J. Watt and the Texans are divorcing after 10 seasons. Watt made the announcement to Texans fans on Twitter last hour.
I want to speak directly to you and the city of Houston so you can hear the words straight from my mouth. I have sat down with the McNair family, and I have asked them for my release. And we have mutually agreed to part ways
in
this
Houston.
Time.
Watt won Defensive Player of the Year award three times over a four-year stretch from 2012 through 15. He had five sacks this season, playing 16 games for just a second time since 2015. The other lead story in the NFL is Trevor Lawrence throwing for as many as 17 NFL teams right now at Clemson. That's about 16 teams too many, since Lawrence is 99.99999% guaranteed to be a Jaguar come April. Lawrence is throwing today on his own because he needs left shoulder surgery. He'll be recovered from that by training camp. And the Pouncey brothers jointly announcing their retirement this morning. They combined for 13 Pro Bowls. Marquise was only a Steeler while Mike played for the Dolphins and then the Chargers. Speaking of tennis, another odd scene thanks to COVID today. The day at the Australian Open started with fans, ended without them because a five-day COVID lockdown went into effect at midnight local time. So a half hour before that, fans were made to head home, briefly delaying Novak Djokovic's match with Taylor Fritz. They went the distance, Djokovic finally winning in five sets. Serena Williams, Naomi Osaka, and Simona Halep won before all of that. NBA last night, Steph Curry, 40 more points, 10 more threes in the Warriors' 111-105 home win over the Magic. In Portland, the Blazers got the best of the best from the East.
Outlet to Melo. He has the last 5 points for the Blazers. Another three, another make! Melo is on fire! And the Blazers lead it 102-97. Doc Rivers wants
Travis Demers on Blazers radio. Melo scored 16 of his season-high 24 in the fourth to close out a 118-114 win over the Sixers. The Celtics hit a season-high 23s. Shemi Ojeleye, Peyton Pritchard each had six in a 120-106 decision over the Raptors. Miami won in Houston 101-94, and the Pacers snapped the four-game slot 111-95 in Detroit. Daytona 500 pole sitter Alex Bowman had engine trouble in one of last night's qualifying races. If he needs a new motor, he'll start from the back of the field on Sunday. And on ice last night, Florida stopped Tampa Bay's six-game win streak 5-2. The Oilers got their win streak to 3-0 in Montreal. Bill, back to you.
Oh, sorry, Bogus. I was distracted. I was actually filling out this ballot and putting you as the All-Star in every radio category. I just had to.
Rich Ackerman.
He was on there, Tommy, until we dropped a Tommy. Like that, you know, I mean, look. We all miss shots, but that, you know, that doesn't mean you get to be an All-Star that year. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, his purr took a big hit with that mistake. No doubt about that.
You definitely led me into that, and I dig that. I dig that about you. I dig that about you, Andrew Bogish.
On our show, we don't self-gloss.
Oh, my God. That's Bogish.
Andrew Bogish is a pro, dude.
You are the Easterby of this show. And if that makes you the Machiavelli or I don't know what it is.
That's the meanest thing you could say to me right now.
No! In a really good way.
So the opposite Easterby? That. No.
I meant Steve Easterby, the
Sell.
I got nothing. 855-212-4CBS. Page 31. When I say it, you do it. All right, we have to go to break. We'll be back next here on CBS Sports Radio, per Andrew Bogish.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. I was contemplating the other day I don't know if it's the end of, but the moment that we're in which movies are no longer, not only do they not reign supreme in terms of that part of our culture dominating how we tell stories, it's television now, but it's reversed. Remember when movies were the highest end of the highest art form in that medium, and television was sort of cheesy and secondary? And there was a time where it was, wow, a lot of TV shows are so good. It's like watching a movie. No one would insult these TV shows now by comparing them to films. And the reason it came up is I am a SAG-AFTRA member. I'm a member of that union because, you know, famous actors, actresses, and then just random radio hosts thrown in. That's the pairing. We are the, you know, we tip the scales. Tom Cruise didn't have a lot going for him until the Bill Ryders and the DAs of the world were able to get in there and really make a difference. But we get these screeners. It's really cool. We get to watch and vote for the SAG-AFTRA Awards, and every year I look forward to when they come out, and you get to see movies early. It's super exciting. And this year, Lori and I couldn't go to movie theaters, so we get to like have them all come to us, and we're just like, eh. I guess we should watch these, I'm not really into it. And I have to go watch WandaVision, which I disparaged for 3 straight weeks on the radio like a real moron. So that's what's going on. And I was scrolling through yesterday. I'm like, oh, there's Tenet. I can just get Tenet now. And I love James Nolan. I mean, Christopher Nolan. James Nolan, I don't know. Christopher Nolan, I'm a fan of. And see, I even forgot his name. One of my favorite like writer, forgot who he is. I just didn't have an interest. I'm like, I heard mixed things, and I guess I could watch it, but I haven't watched not Tombstone, what Yellowstone. That show's supposed to be amazing, which I haven't even seen a second of, and there's a bunch of shows that are out there. Have you seen Tenet yet? I know you're a big Christopher Nolan fan.
I've been afraid. I haven't seen a single person who liked it. Not even one person who will vouch for this movie. So I didn't want to put it on because I'm with you. Christopher Nolan is one of my absolute favorites. His brother Jonathan Nolan makes Westworld with his wife, which is one of my favorite television shows. I'm a huge Nolan guy, but I can't bring myself to watch this movie.
James Nolan, a well-known baker in somewhere Mississippi, who just, you know, I just called out an accident.
Him too.
That's not the name of anybody who makes films. Good job. I'm a big fan of Stephanie Spielberg. He's amazing. I think he's real good. Yeah,
Johnny Scorsese.
That was a much better example than mine. Is there a film you can think of that's come out in the last year, year and a half that just was riveting? I'm sure there is one. I just can't remember what it is.
No, we've talked about this. I mean, it's the whole industry's been depressed, and the things they've released straight to movie, I mean, like straight to video or straight to streaming, haven't been that
right.
Great. I mean, The Queen's Gambit was a miniseries, so in between television and movie, it doesn't count.
That's a TV show.
Yeah.
I think that's a TV. Yeah, I mean, because it's, I mean, television is now episodic in a way that movies felt like they used to be. And the other thing is, it's interesting, I don't know the reason for this, but movies used to have all this creative energy, and they just went the way of sequels. Now, in some cases, it worked. I mean, I'm telling you, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is incredible. But did you see this yet? We really need a remake of Face Off? Like,
I was
that's
just about to say, remakes too. Yeah, franchises, sequels, and just flat out remakes. Even shot for shot remakes. Even redoing the Disney and live animation. None of that stuff appeals to me at all. I'm with you.
Why would you remake Face Off? You're gonna do a Face Off with Face Off? I mean,
yeah.
Are we in a simulation or are we in a simulation?
That's an idea that I sell.
All right, so you guys, here's where I think we're going down on the vote. We'll all vote together here on the radio live. And Tom, this is the chance if you want to talk me out of any of these. I think in the Eastern Conference, in fact, let's start in the Western Conference because that's how the vote starts. I've got to pick 3 front court players right now. And to me, it just feels like Kevin Durant, Kevin Durant is not in that conference. It feels like LeBron James, Jokic, and Kawhi are no-brainers. Is there anybody you want to make a case for before we get there?
I mean, I think you said it. I think those are the obvious, those are the guys. I mean, I know Kawhi isn't having, like, the most mind-blowing season, but the reality is he belongs in this group.
Right? I mean, it just feels... And Kawhi's playing a lot of games, and if you, like, sort of dive into what he's been about, he's playing at such a high level. He's playing at such an incredible level. It's hard for me not to just be like, he's got to be the guy. I mean, there's a case out there, and I don't think it's the right case, but there's a case out there that he could be actually the MVP.
Right, I think he's in that group of 5 that are in that conversation right now, so that means he's an all-star.
All right, on the guard side, I mean, to me, it seems obvious. It feels like it's in the West. It's Steph Curry, and they've got Doncic listed as a guard, which is another really difficult thing about this process in the NBA, and certainly true for all. And I would presume this is a precursor to me having a vote, which is it's the All NBA that actually terrorizes me, because those are attached to players' bonuses and they are significant for their contracts, and it's hard enough to do correctly in a normal or 10 years ago. These guys are all positionless, so it gets really tricky.
Yeah, I still see him as a guard, though. I guess maybe just because he handles the ball.
He is a guard.
So much. He is a guard. And that team's not impressive, so I can see maybe that argument against. But, like, this dude, right. It's 27.8 points per game, 8.7 rebounds, and 9.3 assists. I mean, this dude is
That's insane.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's LeBron. Those are LeBron numbers.
Exactly.
And we saw, this is not that season, but we saw in the postseason, he's also a winner, right? Like, the guy is clearly... Maybe his team's not, but it's not like they're hollow stats. Like, he can put a team on his back.
Yep. It's just a three-point shot still coming along, but that doesn't disqualify him from being an all-star.
He's going to get better.
He is.
He's going to get better. And then I think in the Eastern Conference, I think the front court's pretty self-explanatory. Giannis, Embiid, and KD. It's probably more in the order of Embiid, KD, and Giannis. But I think those three for sure. I think Bradley Beal is a no-brainer. We talk about LaVine versus Trae Young. I think I'm going to vote Trae Young. I'm really conflicted on this one.
It's tough. I think it's the closest one of all 10 spots. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. I'm with you on Trae Young. I think he's come along. He's continuing on kind of that trajectory up, but he's definitely still on that up trajectory. He's averaging 9.5 assists a game with his just prolific scoring. And, you know, there's an X factor. It's the reason why I'm also just, like, so pro Curry being in the MVP race. When you watch, and not to unnecessarily compare them, I know people overdo it with that, but when you watch these two guys on the court, it's just amazing watching Trae Young and Steph Curry anytime they're playing.
Yes.
Not that it isn't with LaVine. I just think there's a different kind of vibe. I don't know. Maybe, and you tell me if this is an overstep, but I think part of the All-Star thing, especially when you're breaking a tie, is kind of like the vibe of the influence of the player when you're watching them, and that is leans towards Trae to me than LaVine.
It's a great point, and it's how do you, if you're a media member, if you're me, or if players get a vote too, some former players, or current players, excuse me, it's not all NBA, it's all star. Like, the star is part of the equation, but some of that's self-made, right? I mean, Chris Middleton should have been an all-star and complained about it a few years ago, and then, as I understand it, asked Adam Silver for advice in the offseason, right? And Adam Silver gave him some of, got to work the media, got to work the fans, it's a star. I mean, Klay Thompson's getting votes, which people are mocking. I get it, but he's an all-star level caliber talent, and people love him, and he's a star, right? Like, there is a star component that I think is significant. All right, we're going Trae Young. I think it's the right call. And by the way, Trae Young for Luka Doncic, we don't talk about this enough because they haven't gotten to success, but when they start winning championships, it's almost like, it's a bad comparison historically, but to make it easy, it would almost be like a Manning for Brady trade. Or maybe it's more like a Rodgers for Russell Wilson trade. I mean, they're both so good, but I think Luka's is clearly better. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. I knew Urban Meyer was going to fail, and I told you he was going to fail, and I look forward to being right over that, you know, in September, October, November. Did not think that was going to be the case in February. We already can see that it is. Why Urban is going to Urban next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you on this Friday. We are, as always, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. I'm not a big technology guy. 855-212-4CBS, by the way. 855-212-4CBS. I don't really like Twitter. I'm on there. I don't really like it. I'm on the Insta, which is to say that I have an account that I can occasionally access if I can remember my password. But I have enjoyed, as I've thrown this out the last, I guess, month, Tom DiBenedetto, the executive producer, will know the answer. Tom, when did I first start dropping the Messenger Facebook communication option for folks listening? Facebook.com/BillRuddersports.
Probably a little bit more than that. Probably right before the holidays, between Thanksgiving and the holidays. That's when you started getting some, like, holiday well wishes.
That's right. So many of you have used that, including the last few days, to express very kind words about the passing of my friend Trez Paylor and about the show. And radio's an interesting thing because it's such an intimate medium, I think. You are connecting with people. You're going to their lives. You're going to their world. But you know this, Tom. You also speak into a microphone, and you try not to lose sight of the fact that people are listening and that they're giving you their time. And to those of you that are doing that, thank you. You don't have to write me. You don't have to reach out. But it's just a nice reminder, the connection that exists. And I promise you that's two ways. And we're very grateful and very appreciative for you here on the program. Again, Twitter for me, Sports Writer, Sports, and my last name, R-E-I-T-E-R. Mr. DiBenedetto is producer underscore Tom. And on Facebook, facebook.com/BillRiderSports. So I feel like I'm pretty good at getting stuff right. Not all the time. But I've never been afraid to say the things that seem correct, even if they're not wildly popular. If you want to, I mean, I've been labeled a lot of things: hot taker, one of those guys who shouts, you know, on the TV networks. I mean, it's a thing. I mean, my boy Tom Haberstroh, you know, was not a big fan of my coverage in Miami in the beginning, and neither were any of those NBA guys. And you know, being right has a way of changing people's perspective on you. Sometimes the perspectives I have do seem a little far-fetched. I don't understand the consternation that somewhat surrounded my Urban Meyer's going to fail take. I just don't. And really, the perspective was less he's going to fail and more it does not feel like this is a sure thing. Like it feels like maybe it's more 60-40 or against or 70-30 against. Can he be successful? Of course he can be successful. Is he likely to be successful? No, he's absolutely not. It's like a Browns quarterback. Can he be successful over the course of the last 20 years? Yes, I think he probably can. Is he going to be? Sure, doesn't seem like that's a likely outcome. And in Urban Meyer's case, it's not because of the organization he's going into, but because of the situation that he inhabits. Let me just make a point to you that I think is interesting. Before we get into this Chris Doyle debacle and the power of arrogance, and I would imagine, I don't have insight into this, I would make an educated hypothesis being surrounded by sycophants and how that impacts someone like Urban Meyer. Nick Saban is the greatest college football coach of all time. And how you want to parse and weight college success versus NFL success, particularly when Nick Saban has gone to the National Football League and you can weigh him as wanting there, right? You can make a case on the basketball side for Coach K, I suppose, and there's no way to really knock him for a lack of NBA experience and you throw in his Olympic success. You can make a case, right? If you want to just go straight basketball coach. You can make a case, I think, for Nick Saban as the greatest football coach of all time, especially with Belichick's shine being somewhat smudged, somewhat probably being an understatement. But at the NFL level, Nick Saban went 15-17. I mean, that's not great. That's not Hugh Jackson. It was 9-7 his first year. With the Miami Dolphins, by the way. It's not like he left and the Dolphins set the world on fire. I mean, who's been, not including Brian Flores, their most successful head coach since Nick Saban? Adam Gase? I mean, come on. Get out of here. My point is it's not easy to transition from college to the National Football League, and Saban was 15-17 and is deemed an all-time failure. What makes you think Urban Meyer is going to be successful even before the Chris Doyle news? And here's the Chris Doyle news, and I'm from Iowa, so there was some familiarity with me in this story. Chris Doyle was the longtime strength and conditioning coach for the University of Iowa. Decades. And Kirk Ferentz, who is a very handsomely paid and very, very well-regarded head coach, protected him for a long time. Ferentz has deep relationships around college football and the NFL. He is widely respected. And so he can put in a call. He can make favors happen for people. And I would imagine that's something he did for Chris Doyle. Because Doyle, over the course of his time, of Doyle's time in Iowa, had a number of accusations about abusive and racist treatment. And I you have to be careful making accusations to people, especially of certain kinds. If you call someone a racist, that is a life-altering label. And for me, like, I'm not willing to go to the extremes on either one of our sort of political perspectives. To me, you have to be careful making that label because it is career-ending, and it is career-ending because it should be if it's true. That isn't a second chance opportunity. But I don't think that should apply when you don't know and it's uncertain. Not a cop-out. I just think it is such a severe and important mistake, error, moral shortcoming, abhorrent worldview that if and when it's true, you should be gone. And I don't know what's true with Chris Doyle, but I know this. a number of black players who understand what it is to be a black American in a way that I cannot. And I don't know your personal situation, but if you are not a black man, if you're not a black American, I would say you cannot or probably do not. A number of black players spanning many years, many different teams, many different success levels, said that Doyle used racist language and treated them differently based on their race. Many of these players are NFL players now, or were NFL players. Many of these players put their names to these complaints, to the point that Doyle was let go. He's no longer at the University of Iowa. He is neither worthy of, at first blush, the certainty that these were false accusations. I've seen nothing to suggest that this isn't true. And I hate to act in a way about something that I think is much more important than success, but it is success, it is money, it is victories, in football it is wins. That shapes everything. Antonio Brown, the fact that Antonio Brown has a Super Bowl ring makes me want to throw up. Not figuratively, it makes me sick to my stomach. And I've tried to celebrate what Tom Brady has done and to lean into the joy for Bucs fans. The world's a complicated place, right? I can talk about Tom Brady and his excellence, and I can be happy for Gronk, and I can be happy even for Bruce Arians, who I think did something to a media member that was worthy of my contempt toward him at the time. But okay. I can't get there with Antonio Brown. The reason Antonio Brown has a second chance is because he's massively talented. Chris Doyle's not Antonio Brown, right? He's not. I mean, it's just not that that should be the standard, but if that is the reason, and a few voices like me are going to come on the radio and be like, you shouldn't be hiring this guy even though. There's no even though here. He's the director of sports performance. With all respect to people who do that for a living, kind of like people who do what I do for a living, you're replaceable. There's a lot of you guys. There's a lot of me guys. A lot of you gals and me gals. Not really gal. Came out awkwardly. But you know what my point is? You know what my point is? This is the guy you're going to hire? Urban Meyer hasn't learned a damn thing. That's the takeaway. Urban Meyer's whole, we vetted him, and we made our decision. You vetted him? Cool. Well, you suck at vetting, and you're probably going to suck at coaching the NFL. How's that sound? Hey, Urban. I know you had a really sophisticated vetting mechanism, but let me give you this, and it's new, and I don't know how much it costs. I haven't looked into it, and it's hard to access, so I understand that what I'm asking for, not insurmountable, but it's a big challenge, but, given your job, you probably should look into it anyway. This thing called Google. You literally, it's G-O-O-G-L-E, and then you put a .com on the end, and if you have an internet connection, you push the enter button, and then things come up about whatever you've typed in. Try it. Google yourself sometime. What are we talking about here? These aren't college kids. And unfortunately, and this is a reality, that there is there's a dark fact to what it is to build a college football program. And it's untoward, and it's creepy, and it's weird, and it's part of the reason I didn't want to write about college sports. But I'm a hypocrite because I did write about college sports anyway, and I was very good at it, if I may say that so myself, and it helped me afford the life that build the life that I have. So I share in this hypocrisy. But college coaches go into powerful men, charming men. You have to be the most charming of the charming to get to where you want to be if you're an aspiring college football coach. Go into the living rooms of 17 and 16-year-old young men who don't know their you-know-what from their you-know-what because none of us did at 16 or 17, and their parents. And I have seen friends of mine be overwhelmed by, not overwhelmed, but maybe overwhelmed by the mirage of fame or pseudo-fame, right? Like, we all think fame is being Tom Cruise or Tom Brady. It's a whole level of it. There's a level of this. Like, you know, I'm from Dubuque, Iowa, right? Not a huge town, but if you're the local, 6 o'clock news anchor, there's a level of fame there. I've seen grown men be overwhelmed by fame and the attention and how things change and the inability to have we all have a compass and a moral compass and a compass of who we trust that is built in our life experience. And for those people that have suddenly been thrust into a position of a lot of attention, the compass is hard. It's hard to gauge sometimes. That's true for adults. So the Urban Meyers of the world, and I have friends who are college coaches. I'm not disparaging them. I have followed high school kids around. I wrote a disparagingly brutal thing about Michael Beasley that I'm still not sure was the right thing when he was a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid. So I'm a part of this. I'm not separating myself. I understand. But they have to go in and they have to convince these young men, come to my program. Your entire future, I love you. I'm gonna take care of you. I'm gonna support you. They are salesmen. They are seductress. And the moment they get into that program, it shifts. And it has to. It's part of the job. I am your lieutenant. I'm in charge of you. We are not friends. And there's the reason they can do that in part is there's a power dynamic. You sign up to go to Ohio State. You sign up to go to Wisconsin. You sign up to go to Alabama. You're there, man. And even with a bit of a player empower movement, they have the money. You don't. They have the power. You don't. They're adults. You're not. They control your future. I know what it feels like as a married grown man with a child to have a boss threaten my future if I tell the truth and threaten my wife's future. I've had that experience. I've had some, and that is overwhelmingly crippling. And I'm, if I may say so, I have a lot of weaknesses, but I'm a pretty, I can be a fairly formidable person in moments like that. That's not easy. Can you imagine being 19? You don't think these coaches, some of them, like, I'll end you, I'll destroy you in their own way? And this creates a cocoon for people who have succeeded in that world if they don't have the right moral compass. And I want to disparage, like, Frank Martin, one of the best people I've ever met. One of the best people I've ever met. Doesn't apply to him. I've seen it. And Scott Drew, incredible person. Like, it doesn't apply to everybody. It applies to some people. I don't know if it applies to Nick Saban, right? It's really interesting. I actually don't know. I have a guess on Urban Meyer and the level to which he exerted control, and it was effective. But you can operate in a bubble. If you're the president of the United States, and there's been a lot of research on this, a lot of anecdotal writing and study, doesn't matter how good you are at being president, doesn't matter your politics, it's hard to see the world clearly after 4 or 8 years in the White House. If you're a celebrity, it's hard to know who to trust. It's amazing how many incredibly successful, wealthy, driven star athletes will marry people they knew in high school who they love, they'll tell you, but in part because I can't trust anyone post this year, post this experience. You can be warped by the world that you're lucky enough to build for yourself if you're one of these people. And that is true for Urban Meyer. That's why Nick Saban, quote unquote, failed. That's why so many coaches fail. It isn't just football excellence. It's a sense of perspective. And humility is the wrong word, but you have to know yourself. You can be an arrogant, ego-driven maniac, but you have to have self-awareness in that. I don't think Urban Meyer is high on the rankings of the world's most self-aware people. If I were going to put that list together and get to 20 million people, I don't think the words Urban Meyer would appear next to each other. We vetted this guy. Like, you don't have to agree with my worldview on, you should, but on this particular topic. And Chris Doyle could be the greatest director of strength sports performance ever. That ain't the point. There are people around the National Football League who believe this guy is a racist. And that's it. That's enough. That's the deal. Those locker rooms, NFL locker rooms, are some of the few places in America that are actually the American dream playing out, in the sense that people that have succeeded through their own meritocracy, who look different, who sound different, who have different religions, who have different skin color, who have different backgrounds, who have different economic backgrounds, and they come together in a common cause. And that doesn't mean that all those people, here's the reality of America, folks, if you like it or don't like it, have to, like, put aside their beliefs, right? You need to deal with Chris Doyle. No, it means respect becomes more important, and the ability to navigate differences becomes more important, and the ability we used to be able to do this in America, strongly disagree with something that someone thinks or says, but have common cause out of respect. And the problem with Chris Doyle is a respect problem. And the problem for Urban Meyer is, in hiring him, there is no respect given to those people in that locker room who might have that view. Urban Meyer vetted this guy. Did you call the people in your locker room who are leaders, who are voices that matter, who are black or who are white, and say, is this okay? Media is going to say stuff. That idiot Phil Ryder Bider is going to say stuff. The newspaper is going to, what is in your heart? You think Urban Meyer did that? I have some land I want to sell you in Nevada. He didn't. And this is why he's going to fail. There is an arrogance. There is a cluelessness. It's not going to work, folks. It's not going to work. You have to treat grown men like grown men. And I've seen this too. I've seen this in my own business and in life. I have been a protege of people, and I've tried to mentor people and help people. And one of the hardest things to transition from is and again, I'm sorry to keep, I'm not really sorry, but I'm going to keep bringing up Therese Paylor. You have to, it's wonderful to help people succeed, but when they surpass you or surpass your ability to help them, that is when there's a real test of who you are, as, I think, as a man, as a person. Therese, you know, whatever. Like, there was a time where I was a mentor to him, and I tried to help him in his career, and not because I'm some kind of saint or that important, but because I thought he was a great guy and a massive talent, and he blew past me and everybody I know, and I celebrated that, and it was awesome. Not everyone can do that. Not everyone can do that. For some people, it's hard to see, and I'm sure I've done it with people too, right? Therese and I were really close, where you see somebody. I mean, you can talk to anybody in any business. You come in, you're young, and the boss is, you have to leave a place because the boss is always see you as what you were when you were 24. It's like, bro, I'm 34 now, or I'm 28, or I'm 42. I'm not the thing I used to be. And the problem with guys like Urban Meyer is they still see football players as the kids they recruited and in some cases hoodwinked and dominated from high school to college. They're grown men. They have families. They are prideful. They are mature. They are assertive. They have money in the bank. And gas in the tank, you know what I'm saying? And they don't need your dictatorial approach. You haven't done anything at the National Football League level. Urban Meyer hasn't done anything other than hire a guy who is a great big red flag. Shame on Urban. Shame on him because, and I don't know Chris Doyle. Is this the one out of 100 times? Because it does happen where it's a huge conspiracy against the guy and it's snowballed and it's a Twitter mob. I don't know. I'm gonna say probably not because, you know, one out of 100 is pretty hard for that to be the case. It occurs. That ain't the point. You want this guy to be part of your staff? It's the guys in the locker room who have to vet him and have to be saying we vetted him. And the fact Urban Meyer doesn't get that means he doesn't get the National Football League. And the fact Urban Meyer doesn't get the National Football League means Saban's 15-17 is going to look like the Pete Carroll era compared to what Urban Meyer's got coming up. 855-212-4CBS. We'll take some phone calls, and we'll get into Carson Wentz. Man, it's hard. The guy that was a mentor that I don't talk to anymore that I referenced used to say, there's not a talent pool, talent puddle. That is certainly true of the people running teams in the National Football League. We transition from the early incompetence of the Jags to the continued incompetence of the Eagles. How not to negotiate next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
And Vinny in Arizona is on the line. It all comes together. Vinny, what up, dude? You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, man. How are you today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. So, where do you think J.J. Watt's going to end up, and what is his worth being a 10-year vet who's had injury issues?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Thanks for the call. J.J. Watt is probably going to be in the kind of headspace that you see from players who are prideful and are doubling down on their commitment when they feel like they've been wronged. That is, I know he's not the same player. I get it, but feels comparable maybe to Tom Brady. So I think we'll see what Watt wants in terms of money, but it wouldn't shock me if he just wants to go to a place and win. The window's closing. I think the Rams are interesting. I think the Bills are a really interesting fit. I don't know why you would go to the Patriots, but I know there's been a lot of talk about that. And by the way, I do know why. There are a lot of smart people who think that the Patriots 6-10 season was actually a success, and actually counterintuitively and not in a way that people that talk about sports for a living like I do maybe have recognized that it was actually a success from Belichick, and that they find a better quarterback. Some of the guys who opted out for understandable reasons return, and it's, you know, you start to get to that transitional period another year away from Tom Brady, that there can be a big upswing, right? That they can have a turnaround. And if J.J. Watt believes that, then I think it makes a lot of sense. But I think look at places that are on the cusp of an opportunity that already have a really solid defense and could use J.J. Watt for the time he can be out there and a leadership role, right? And I think that's where I think Buffalo's on the cusp. I think you can make an argument that San Francisco is. I think Seattle would be an interesting fit. If Deshaun Watson gets traded, if I don't think Russell Wilson will get traded, if they go to a place like Miami or a place like San Francisco and those organizations become automatic contenders, I think the Colts are interesting. To me, the Bills make the most sense. I think Buffalo makes a ton of sense. You could see them make a leap. You could jump. And to a certain degree, as much as Mahomes and the Chiefs are terrifying the AFC, the victory for Brady and the Bucks is at least a relief for AFC teams because, like, okay, we don't have to face this guy to the Super Bowl, right? So, you know, the AFC side of things, it ain't easy. It ain't easy. I understand the Chiefs and the Mahomes. But for me, a month ago it was, you don't want to go through the AFC, and now it's, you don't want to go through the AFC or the NFC. But at least those two guys, Mahomes' team and Brady's team, are divided. So if you look at the next closest team, feels like Buffalo's that team. We saw how good they are. We saw the leap Josh Allen took. That defense needs to be better, but I think it's capable of being better. Thanks for the call at 855-212-4CBS. David in Buffalo, fortuitous. What's up, pal? You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Bill, appreciate you having me on this morning, man. I totally agree with you. I think the Bills need to go after J.J. Watt. Obviously, he's going to play at a little bit of a reduced salary than what he played with Houston, but I think we need pass rush help. And this is a guy that, you know, situationally can be a game wrecker. You know, he can force fumbles. We've seen him, make plays on screen passes and run them back for interceptions. I think it's a type guy that would be a perfect fit with the Bills or a younger team. He's a veteran guy. It would make a ton of sense, and I think he definitely wants, you know, one last shot to win it all. And I think the Bills, with their organization, obviously Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean are well respected around the NFL. I think this is a no-brainer. I think the Bills got to do this, and then you could build up in the draft too, you know, because I think that defensive line is the one piece we're missing to really be a contender to win it all.
Yeah, I'm with you, David. And to me, the perfect comp to another sport, I think, we'll see, for J.J. Watt, might be Justin Verlander, right? Because J.J. Watt had a down season of sorts this year. I mean, I don't even know. I looked at it this morning. I think it's like 5 or 6 sacks, forced a couple fumbles, played, I think, all 16 games, wasn't wildly impactful, right? Like, I mean, you're talking about a guy who was fine, was good. Wasn't the superstar we've seen in the past. And it's easy for the reaction to be, you got to put in effort. That shows a lack of heart. But where you go to work and how you feel about when you go to work and how you feel about the people around you, it makes a really big difference. And if we can just point out some facts from Jeff Darlington, who just tweeted this, here are the departures from Houston since Jack Easterby was hired in April of 2019. April 2019 is not that long ago. The GM's gone. Remember DeAndre Hopkins? That's crazy. I'm not saying that everyone's playing violins out of sadness for Bill O'Brien, but still, their head of PR that people loved is gone. The president just stepped down, and now team captain J.J. Watt. And Verlander in Detroit had a good run, and it didn't work, and he wasn't happy there. It wasn't a good fit. And when Verlander went to Houston, people thought, like, yeah, you know, the guy's, if you look, that guy's good. He's later in his career. He's kind of a 5-inning guy now, right? If he can get you 6, you know, quality starts, 6 innings, 3 runs, you know, and put him in the back of a, you know, third in the rotation. And he became a Cy Young. I mean, there can be a rejuvenation of excellence when you're in an excellent situation. It's not just Tom Brady who's shown us this. Justin Verlander has shown us this reality. We've seen this from so many people so many times. I mean, God help the National League with Trevor Bauer now as a Dodger. Not that Mookie Betts wasn't a star before, but Boston was an organization on the downturn. He goes to the Dodgers. They win a World Series, and Betts is just a huge catalyst for that. I think J.J. Watt can be a similar impact player, can have a similar, I think turnaround is the wrong word. I just think there's more of the old J.J. Watt there than maybe we've talked about, because there hasn't been reason to, because he hasn't been able to do it. Thank you for the call, David, at 855-212-4CBS. Just real quick on Carson Wentz. I love it when the calls come in and these things happen. I'm not a expert negotiator. I don't have an MBA. I don't have a postgraduate degree. I'm not a McKinsey. Is that the name of the organization? McKinsey consultant. But I do know that you try to buy when they're selling, sell when they're buying, and practice the art of silence. It's not easy, but it's not like it's rocket science. You don't have to memorize it. You know, it's not trying to get a Comrex to work. You know, from a hotel room. You know, it's real simple. I have in my life had negotiations with newspaper editors, and they're like, how much money do you want to make? Do you think you deserve? And I have said a number and not spoken for like 4 minutes as we've just stared at each other, right? not rocket science, not comfortable, but just bask in the uncomfortable silence. It's a powerful thing. There's nothing like going into, I don't know, a guy like Scott Pioli and asking a tough question, just letting the uncomfortable silence sit. What you don't do is be like, I'm going to trade Carson Wentz and I want 7 first-rounders. I want what I want. He's Matt Stafford. Crickets, bro. See those crickets coming back at you? That's the uncomfortable silence being used against you. That's what's happening. It's like trying to date somebody, right? My name's Bill, and you're real pretty, and I want to spend time with you. Would you like to spend time with me? Do you have a drop of footsteps running the other direction? Play it cool, Eagles. Tell those Eagles to be cool. Samuel Jackson voice. Calm the hell down. Leaking. You know, the Eagles would like, this is from like Aaron Porter. The Eagles would like a Matt Stafford style package. Cool. Cool. I would like a Tom Brady life package. Guess what I ain't? I ain't Tom Brady. Let's adjust our expectations. You know, I saw that Jim Rome signed a new deal. I'm going to call Chernoff and demand a bunch of... You ain't Jim Rome! Slow down! Slow your roll! Yeah! Chernoff, it's Ryder. I want a raise. I want 3 first-round picks, and I want 7 figures. What do you say to that? Yeah, you do. Yeah, yeah. And literally the next day, hi, welcome to the Andrew Bogus Show. Our national nightmare is over. Ryder's gone. That's how that story ends. That's how that story concludes. Oh, the Eagles are stupid. I mean, that's just my take. The Eagles are run by idiots. Carson Wentz is not Matt Stafford. He is a reclamation project. And he may be a reclamation project that turns around, but it's a maybe. He's not Matt Stafford in that trade. He's Jared Goff. That's who he is in that trade. He's a maybe. He's a question mark. There aren't a lot of suitors, and the people that are literally laughing at you are, and you have to trade him now. You've screwed this up so badly. It's like announcing to your wife that you're leaving her for the nanny without running it by the nanny. A, it's not a really good life moral choice, but B, if you're going to make that call, you should make sure the nanny's on board before you do that.
Yeah, before right? There even is a nanny. There isn't right. Even a nanny in the picture yet.
If you'd like to spend some time getting your lawyers, just to set up your view of this, honey, my plan is to leave you for someone much younger and hotter. What? You know, that's my plan. I think 2 first-round picks for me, it makes sense, right? Cool. Cool, Joe. Sounds like a plan. That's what's going on. All right, that's my take on the Eagles. I shouldn't do the whole, like, philandering guy thing because people think I'm taking shots at Stewart and I'm not like that's I mean Stu's single. Stu's not married. I mean that's not a fair comparison for
bogus.
Was that a bogus or a bogus?
Bogus.
Hi Andrew.
What about me? What did I do?
Just no. I'm saying what's up.
No. The bogus sounder. Did I do something to Stu? I mean I'm happily. Diss Stu if you need me to do it. If you don't want to, I'll take that bullet.
I feel bad because I like to kind of like do real world comparisons, analogies, and metaphors. And I just did a whole thing on infidelity. And then just when I do that, then I get notes like, why are you taking shots at Stu? I'm like, I'm taking shots at Stu. What are you talking about? Like, what's even going on here?
But again, that's Stu's choices. You're not taking a shot at Stu. Stu is putting himself in position for comments. That's not your fault.
Look, I'm going to use a term that I haven't used in my life. It's called a rake. And I've learned from Bridgerton, which I'm embarrassed to admit I've watched a couple episodes of last time.
Wow.
Because I just needed something that was like, you know, like, I'm like, what the hell, I'll put this on. And made me laugh. There's a rake in this, right? You're such a rake. You're such a womanizing rake. But you know what? Like, there's also a lot of sensitivity to Stu. I'm not criticizing anybody. And I'm not even saying that's what Stu is. But if he is, I'm not making that criticism. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're not judging Stu. It's just no. Facts are facts.
Stuart Kovac, CBS on Twitter.
hey, Stu.
You know, I'm not even saying that he is the thing that, right? I'm just saying if he is, he's not married. You know, you can date as many people as you want, right? Isn't that the way that works with young people?
I thought so.
I thought so. I don't know either. Bogus, you and I are married with kids. Tommy is engaged, so it's, you know, it's not the world we inhabit, right?
I assume everyone else has all the fun they want whenever they want it with whomever they want, and it's amazing and it's easy and it's all the time. I assume it's like Shangri-La out there.
I mean, look, if I'm a young lady and I see Stu, I'm swiping whatever direction you're supposed to. Like, swipe right? Is that the good one? Stu right?
Swiping in all directions. Just swiping to make sure.
Just swipe. Is that work? Just pushing up and down. I love updates. It's my favorite part of the show. It's an excellent part of the show. And I'm very excited to hear your update if you are prepared to offer it to us.
I am. Thank you for letting me do that. The exodus from Houston continues with J.J. Watt asking for and receiving his release from the Texans.
I'm excited and looking forward to a new opportunity, and I've been working extremely hard. But at the same time, it is always tough to move on. And I just want you guys to know that I love you. I appreciate you. I appreciate the McNair family for giving me drafting me and giving me my first opportunity in the NFL.
Watt's football resume is remarkable, but don't forget that he raised $37 million for Houston after Hurricane Harvey. He's 31. He just played a full season for just the second time since 2015. That news overshadowing Trevor Lawrence's workout at Clemson this morning. The assumed number one pick is throwing today so he can have left shoulder surgery and be recovered in time for training camp. Of course, Urban Meyer and the Jaguars in attendance, as were six other clubs with top 10 picks. And the Pouncey brothers are retiring together. Marquise and Mike were first-round picks in 2010 and 11, respectively. Marquise had the better career, making 9 Pro Bowls in Pittsburgh. His retirement opens up $8 million cap space for the Steelers, who need every last dollar this offseason. Steph Curry hung 40 points and 10 threes on the Magic in last night's 111-105 Warrior win. Over his last 8 games, Curry averaging 35 points with 53 triples. He was asked post-game about being in the MVP conversation.
I really try not to get distracted by that because it kind of taints the moment. And really right now, if I'm doing my job, then I'll be there at the end of the season, and that'll take care of it.
His team 14-12 right now. That's good for 8th in the West. Tomorrow night, they welcome Kevin Durant back to the Bay Area. Novak Djokovic with a 5-set win over Taylor Fritz today at the Aussie Open. The match began with fans, ended in an empty arena. A 5-day COVID lockdown went into effect at midnight local time, so fans were forced to leave before the match ended. The tournament will continue without them. And Patrick Cantlay slept in the lead at Pebble Beach after a 10-under 62 yesterday. Jordan Spieth is 3 shots behind him. Bill, back to you.
Bogus, if I can go back to one of your updates, I really like, you know, brothers and the NFL is a great story, how you really pouncied on that retirement story. You really pouncied on it.
Sell.
Well played. Oh, really? I like that one. Tommy goes,
no. I like
no.
it, too.
It was borderline. I've been giving him a lot of the borderlines on the positive side this week. For good reason, but you know, let's not get carried away.
To be fair, wow. it felt like a ball that came off the bat, you know, where it's perfect, but it's like right at the second baseman. I'm a lefty, right? Just like right, you're like, oh, he's just right. Also, I've never noticed it before, but you just dropped a tournament, and I loved it. I was just like, my ears perked up. You went tournament.
Okay, is that good or bad?
No,
I can't
it.
Tell.
It's
Are
great.
You buying or selling?
I'm buying.
This is hilarious.
Okay.
He actually changed the way I said the word forever. This goes back to the old show when it was 6 p.m. when I first started working with Bill. I first started saying tournament. It was actually about the World Cup. I was calling the World Cup a tournament while it was going on.
We made fun of you.
And it changed. I say tournament every single time now. Oh, it's changed.
Say tournament. I say cat. Like, Lori makes fun of me. I say.
No, no, you ruined it.
I don't say cat. I say cat. Yeah. You know,
so is there not an O in that word? Is it tournament? How do you want me to say it?
I want to say it your way.
You happy here? No, no,
no,
no,
no, no.
I want to say it your way.
To make, then you have to say tournament. You're saying
you
know it the
what?
Right
I'm
way.
I'm going to ask Ack how to say it. Stand by.
In our New York ecosystem,
and then do the opposite. I don't understand what's happening.
in our New York dialect ecosystem, everyone says tournament, but the entire rest of the country says tournament. So it's this weird thing where we all think tournament is normal sounding, but to everybody else that's like abrasive, and they all say tournament.
I say buffet, and my buddy who went to Harvard, this won't shock you, says buffet. Like, he's like, you want to go to the buffet when we're in Vegas? You want to go to the buffet?
That's not the same.
Not at all.
I do. I just want to go with someone else now.
Yeah. can I
Sell.
He says buffet. I like tournament. Look, I grew up saying pop, and then I moved to Missouri, and it was soda. And now I say soda, and everyone that I'm friends with Iowa hears me on the radio like, hey, nice show today. It's pop, you moron, right? Like, no, I haven't heard anybody call it pop in years. But if you call it soda in Dubuque, they'd be like, get out of here. Get out of here, you poser. Anyway, we've gone really long. But I like tournament. We should do a tournament on the show. Like, you know, a tournament for, like, the best, you know, like a tournament about
the
tournaments.
Phone, the whisper phone sneaks through sometimes, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Batman's mask just slipped. Is that Bruce Wayne or Batman? What's happening? Andrew Bogus, have a great weekend, buddy.
You too, guys.
See you, dude. Andrew on Twitter at Andrew Bogus. He's down there in Andrew Bogus. What are you looking at? It's Bogus. It's Bogus here. Let's do Buy or Sell next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
My God, is this the week after the Super Bowl? Amazing. Amazing. Appreciate all of you listening. Hanging out on Twitter, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Great work. Not an easy week for Tom to do his job. And as comes as no shock to anyone who knows him other than, I guess, Bogus, amazing, amazing work by Mr. DiBenedetto. No, but it wouldn't be a shock to Bogus either. Producer underscore Tom on Twitter. Appreciate him more than I can say. Let's get to a phone call. Let's go to beautiful Minnesota. AM 1520. Mike's on the line. Mike, what up, buddy? You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Well, not a lot, Bill. Just out doing some Valentine shopping for the wife. And
Smart man.
Said that J.J. Watt is up for sale. So, you know, I'm a Raiders fan, so that would be a good fit with Max Crosby. I can see the Chiefs maybe picking him up, or the Vikings. Those are my thoughts on that.
No, that's a great – thanks for the call. I mean, I hadn't thought of the Chiefs, and I should have. That makes a ton of sense. And what a middle finger to the Texans, because there was a time when that was going to be a rivalry. I love that. The Raiders are really interesting. I don't think the Raiders are going to land Deshaun Watson, or I don't think anyone's going to land Russell Wilson. But if I'm wrong, if there's a blockbuster trade, and by blockbuster, I'm talking to you, Eagles. If by blockbuster trade, I don't mean Carson Wentz. That involves the Raiders getting a big-time quarterback, I think they potentially become a contender, and that becomes a really interesting place. And I think the motivation for J.J. Watt is 100% going to be winning. But Vegas is a cool-ass city. It's an amazing city. And J.J. Watt is brand conscious, right? Like, he's a fun guy. He likes to be sort of front and center. So that's a great fit for him as well.
He is unbelievably a Gruden-Mayock player, too. I mean, I could totally, because defensive line was a weakness, a specific area they want to improve. That actually makes a lot of sense. And the other thing about the Chiefs and the Bucks, I think this offseason is going to be a little bit like every single available person is going to be rumored to be going straight to the Bucks or Chiefs, which makes a lot of sense. I think especially anybody high profile is going to at least think about giving a discount and going and joining one of those two teams.
And certainly the Chiefs need to work on their offensive line, and Eric Fisher, that wasn't a projected problem, that injury. And it's easier said than done, but the way you beat Tom Brady is you get to Tom Brady, and that's because the way you beat quarterbacks is you get to quarterbacks, and the way you win in the National Football League is you don't get beaten by the other quarterback. Your quarterback basically does the opposite. So it's, you know, a guy that can get to a quarterback, and as somebody said earlier in the show, being a game wrecker is really, really important. And really, really significant. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. I also like J.J. Watt. Like, I was kind of lukewarm. Thought there was a time there, a little bit of an attention hound. But I thought it was really gracious, his goodbye to Houston. And you want to see talent have a chance, at least, at success. And it felt like the Texans were going to be that legitimate chance. It really... really did. How badly run do you have to be to make people like me and maybe people in Houston wonder about Bill O'Brien with a nostalgia? Remember the Bill O'Brien era? Remember when we were 9-7 and couldn't beat the Patriots and were disappointed all the time and things kind of felt icky? That was awesome. Those were the days. You know, most people like look back at their high school or their college years. It's like, remember when we were 24 and we had to work for a living for the first time and we realized that's terrible and we didn't have any money and we were lonely and we missed college? God, Those days were great. I mean, what's become of your life if that's what... Oh, remember Bill O'Brien? He was amazing.
Remember T.J. Yates and Tom Savage?
I forgot the DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, isn't that amazing? Like, there's been so much drama there. Man, what if... So I'm not saying that we're nicknaming Jack Easterby Fredo yet. I'm not saying we are. But we are getting dangerously close to him just being Fredo on the show. And I wanted respect. It's not what Pop wanted. It's what I wanted.
You're my baby brother, Michael.
Never talk about the family business in front of outsiders again. I misquoted that. Where are the cocktail waitresses? Before I sign off, I want to thank you and many of you. Been a tough week, and Trez Paylor, close friend, as I know you know, passed away this week. I took Wednesday off. In fact, I was just forced to take it off by the bosses, which, you know, one of many reasons they're amazing people. And I heard from so many of you via, some of you found my phone number via text message, Facebook Messenger, Twitter. I need to get on my other Facebook thing. There's a different one. I'm not good at, probably message on there. But it was really moving and really kind. And a lot of you, because I knew Trez had passed away before I was able to talk about it, and I actually went home and just sort of went to sleep. I was, you know, bummed. And the news came out, and I woke up to so many messages before I posted anything, because I think you could tell from our interactions on the show. So that love is so cool, and I'm so appreciative of it. And you made a tough week for me a lot better. And it's one of the things I love about radio, just the connection that Tom and I get to make with you and the connection you get to make with us. And so thank you. Appreciate you. God bless you. Hug your loved ones. Enjoy your life. Carpe diem, all that stuff. I'm off next week. But I'll see you in a week and a half. And as always, appreciate you. I'm Bill Ryder. This is Ryder Than You. God bless.